We live in a time in which character is often lacking. Many politicians lie, and the media tells half-truths. Families are under attack by worldly music and entertainment, much of which is influenced by demonic forces. Many young people lack a moral compass, and they have learned to play the victim regardless of their actions, so that way they won't be held accountable. And unfortunately, some churches in popular Christianity have contributed to it by becoming more of a therapeutic community than a moral community. They spend more time helping individuals relieve anxieties and frustrations rather than offering guidance in making moral decisions about Christian conduct. Instead of looking to the church to offer guidance about what choices to make, many people expect the church to affirm choices that they've already made. And that's why I'm grateful for strong apostolic churches that still preach right and wrong. We need biblical wisdom because it equips people to manage life's complexities. Wisdom is a journey to a destination to which we never fully arrive. Today, we're going to explore what wisdom is and where a person gets wisdom. To learn more, join me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. In ancient Israel, especially in the days of Jeremiah and Ezekiel, three distinct classes of religious teachers were recognized by the people: prophets, priests, and wise men, or sages. We see this spelled out in Jeremiah 18:18, which says, "Then said they, Come, and let us devise devices against Jeremiah, for the law shall not perish from the priest, nor counsel from the wise, nor the word from the prophet." So there were three categories of religious teachers. The wise men who gave counsel were sages. Being a sage and being trained in wisdom was special in the ancient Near East. 1 Kings chapter 4, verses 29 to 31 say, "And God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much, and largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the East country and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all men, than Ethan the Ezrahite, and Heman, and Chalcol, and Darda, the sons of Mahol. And his fame was in all nations round about." So there were foreign sages who were extremely wise, but Solomon was wiser than them. Wisdom was a prized commodity in ancient times. Where did sages get their wisdom? There were four main sources, and these sources are still relevant for us today. First, they got wisdom from watching the world and observing how it works. A wise person lives reflectively. Proverbs 3, verses 19 to 20 say, "The Lord by wisdom hath founded the earth. By understanding hath he established the heavens. By his knowledge the depths are broken up, and the clouds drop down the dew." Since creation was formed with wisdom, then to know wisdom is to know how the world works. And this connection between wisdom and creation provides the theological foundation for gaining wisdom through experience and observation. Second, sages got wisdom from tradition. Experience and observation led to insights, and those insights were then taught to others and passed down generation to generation to those who had not actually had firsthand experience. Proverbs 4 is a good example in which a father is teaching his son important truths based on what his father had taught him. This source of wisdom is where we would place broader universal truths that ancient Israel may have picked up from other cultures, such as Mesopotamia and Egypt. There is a universal quality to wisdom, so it makes sense that the book of Proverbs contains many statements that are related to Sumerian, Aramaic, and Egyptian sources. But the book of Proverbs is still unique because it is God-centered. So Israel's wisdom was a combination of wisdom that originated from within Israel and also universal wisdom passed on as traditions. In our time, a couple of examples of traditional sayings that we may have heard as young people are things like, money doesn't buy happiness, or time is a great healer. Those wise sayings have been passed down and shared because there is truth to them. Another source of wisdom comes from a person's mistakes. Proverbs 12:1 says, "Whoso loveth instruction loveth knowledge, but he that hateth reproof is brutish." In other words, a wise person humbly listens to correction or constructive criticism offered by others. In contrast, a prideful person ignores correction, and even worse, sometimes mocks those who try to offer correction. The Bible considers this type of person a fool. And I've seen this in adults, and I'm sure you have too. And I'll admit, it's not easy to receive correction. I think we can sometimes have a natural default to feel a little defensive, especially if there are valid extenuating circumstances. But it is difficult to be around people who won't take correction. And I'm sure that we know at least one person or more who doesn't take constructive criticism well and always has some type of an excuse. They don't take responsibility or show accountability. And I've also observed teenagers who don't take correction well, even when it's definitely needed, and even if it's done respectfully. Unfortunately, in church, I've observed adults try to politely correct young people who were misbehaving in some way, such as maybe being mildly disruptive during service from chatting or giggling, and the response was further rudeness rather than humility. Now, I'm sure that the young person was probably trying to save face around their peers. But when I was growing up, especially when my dad was correcting me or my siblings, we didn't dare mumble anything or make a face or roll our eyes or anything that would display disrespect to his face or even after he was done correcting us. We just stood there and humbly took it or else. And oh my goodness, heaven forbid that another adult would ever have had to correct us. And if they did, I can't even imagine responding by having an attitude. My parents would have been mortified, and we would have gotten into huge trouble when we got home. All that to say, the biggest concern with people who cannot take correction, whether young or old, is that the Bible tells us that it is the behavior of fools. We need to be able to learn from our mistakes and humbly take correction, because even God corrects us. In the Bible, it's often referred to as chastisement. Like a father correcting his child, God will chastise us to restore us to a position of obedience and holiness. And sometimes our pastor needs to correct us. And let's hope that we would respond humbly and respectfully, knowing that he is God's delegated authority in our life. Also, even though the Bible typically considers older people to be usually wiser than the young, not all old people were wiser if they had not learned from experience or mistakes. A good example is Job's friends. In Job chapter 32, Elihu says that a multitude of years should teach wisdom, but great men are not always wise, and the aged do not always understand judgment. So just getting older doesn't necessarily mean that we'll be wiser. To become wiser, we have to be continually learning from observations and experiences, from traditions, and from our mistakes. Finally, and most importantly, the foundation of wisdom is God. Proverbs chapter 2 tells us that the Lord gives wisdom. Knowledge and understanding come out of His mouth. The other sources of wisdom that I mentioned are ultimately only possible because of God. Proverbs 20:12 tells us that the hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord hath made even both of them. Our ability to observe through seeing and hearing is only possible because of God. And since He formed creation with wisdom, our ability to glean wisdom from experience and observation is only possible because of God. So, what about wisdom from other cultures in the ancient Near East? Well, as I mentioned, there were universal truths or traditions that were shared among cultures. But ultimately, I think the Israelites would not have counted the pagans as truly wise. Even the wisest people in the other nations were not fundamentally wise if they did not recognize that God is the creator and sustainer of it all. Since God created the world, only He can give true insight into the way the world works. God is the fountainhead of all wisdom. And the Bible teaches us that wisdom begins with the fear of the Lord, an attitude that leads a person to listen to the words of God. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." The Hebrew word for beginning, reshit, can be understood two ways. First, wisdom doesn't start until a person experiences the fear of the Lord. Second, this fear is the foundation on which wisdom is built. So biblical wisdom is more than just a skill for living. It's primarily relational. Everything must be understood in relationship to God. To have wisdom, a person must have a relationship with God that is characterized by fear. Now, this is an important point and one that often causes confusion. The original Hebrew word for fear is yirah. It can mean fear in the sense of terror, but in relation to God, it usually refers to something akin to awe or reverence. But even those words don't quite do the Hebrew word justice. It involves a deep acknowledgement of God's authority and sovereignty. There is a fear of God's power and judgment, and a reverential awe of His majesty and holiness. This reverence is an integral part of the relationship. Those who fear the Lord do their best to learn God's principles and to live by them out of duty, because He is our sovereign Lord, and out of love, because He is our loving Savior. A person who fears the Lord understands that they are not the center of the universe. God is. We can also see wisdom as relational when we look at the book of Proverbs. In chapters 1, 8, and 9, we hear from woman wisdom. Her large house is situated on the pinnacle of the heights of the city. From this location, she sends out her maidservants to invite all the young men to dine with her. In the ancient Near East, an invitation to dine was an invitation to a relationship. Woman wisdom is inviting the young men to know her and to make her an integral part of their life. In looking at chapter 8, she is described in several ways. She speaks truth and righteousness. She is prudent and full of knowledge. She is strong. She guides rulers, and she has wealth to share. She says that the fear of the Lord is to hate evil. And then she shows that she has the fear of the Lord by confirming that she hates pride, arrogance, the evil way, and the froward mouth. Then verses 22 to 31 talk about wisdom's role in creation. So who is woman wisdom? The location of her house at the highest point of the city is a clue. That would belong to the temple. So Woman Wisdom's house is really a temple, which indicates the Woman Wisdom represents God's wisdom and God himself. Now, let me pause here to explain the issue of gender just quickly. Most nouns in Hebrew, like Spanish, German, and other languages, have a grammatical gender that is not actually related to physical gender, to the physical gender of the object. For example, if I say the cheese in Spanish, it's el queso, which is masculine. La ventana is the window, and it's feminine. But this is grammatical gender, not physical gender, because the cheese is not masculine or a boy, and the window is not a girl. Well, the Hebrew word for wisdom is chokhmah. It is grammatically feminine, so it would have been natural to speak of wisdom as a she. But wisdom is also personified as a woman because she draws a sharp contrast to another woman in Proverbs chapter 9 who lives at the heights of the city, woman folly. It's possible that because of the location of her house, that she also represents the divine. But if so, then she would stand for all of the false gods and goddesses that tried to lure Israel away from the one true God. Woman folly also invites men over for a meal, but her meal is deadly. Those who respond to her invitation end up in the depths of Sheol. So we can see that wisdom is a skill for living, but it is also theological and relational. One must have a relationship with God in order to be wise, and to ignore or reject that is to make one a fool. Even today, we have the choice between wisdom and folly. Proverbs chapter 19, verses 20 to 21 say, "Hear counsel and receive instruction, that thou mayest be wise in thy latter end. There are many devices in a man's heart. Nevertheless, the counsel of the Lord, that shall stand." Mankind has lots of ideas and designs, but the thoughts of man only have substance and endurance if they are subjected to God's counsel, because only God's counsel will endure. All true wisdom, knowledge, and insight come from God. And what does godly wisdom produce that enables us to fit successfully into God's order? Character. Moral character is the greatest goal of training or education. Wisdom is a training process that develops character. So through humility, openness to instruction, learning from mistakes, observing those who are wise, making good choices in the little daily decisions that arise, and deepening one's relationship with God, character takes shape and matures. So let me conclude by kind of pulling all of these strands together. I ended the previous episode with a definition of biblical wisdom. Wisdom seeks to discover God's order in life and then proceeds to successfully fit into that order, always acknowledging human limitations. People who are wise live in harmony with the world as God created it. Since God created the world, he knows best how we can live successfully in it. The fear of the Lord is the foundation for recognizing his sovereignty and being open to learning from him. True wisdom can come only from a relationship with God. Then wisdom is a skill we learn from experience and observation, tradition, mistakes, and most of all from God himself through his word. And as we practice living wisely, which is a lifelong pursuit, our character grows and develops. And I think it would be safe to say that the more we practice living wisely and not foolishly, the more we become Christ-like. Thank you for joining me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. And until next time, take care and God bless.